Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 38, Text 12.
38, 12.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yashat Kilat Miva Abhisumangalai Vachova Mishra Gunakarma Janmabhi Prananti Shumbanti Punanti Vajagat Nistad Virakta Shavashobanamataha. All sins are destroyed and all good fortune is created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearances and words that describe these three things. Wait, let me read this again. All sins are destroyed and all good fortune is created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearances and words that describe these three things, animate, beautiful. Okay, I got it. All things are destroyed and all good fortune is created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearances. And words that describe these three things, animate, beautify, and purify the world. On the other hand, words bereft of his glories are like decorations. On a corpse. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami brings up the following possible objection. How can one who is devoid of ordinary ego, who is fully self-satisfied, engage in pastimes? The answer is given here. Lord Krishna acts on the pure spiritual platform for the pleasure of his loving devotees, not for any kind of mundane gratification. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Nulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripashindu Bayevacha Utitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadevor Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, greetings from the most holy of holy places, Govardhan Hill, Govardhana. It is Vardhana, it's verdant, it's nourishing. Cows, the senses of the devotees, it just nourishes our bhakti. It's quite an amazing phenomena. Living around God. It's like God manifest in this world. It's not different than Krishna. And it's a very, very powerful, powerful experience to actually live by the side of Govardhan Hill. By Prabhupada's grace, I have a little residence here. And
it's wonderful. And I said in the last sangha, such a pleasure taking her around. I'm kind of the Vrindavan host of the Iranian Vaishnavas. And because Krishna consciousness is so difficult to express there, the expression of Krishna consciousness is difficult. It becomes more rare. It's relished and cherished more. And I've been doing kirtan with them, and I don't know, I think no one does kirtan like the Iranian Vaishnavas. Not in the musical expertise, but in their open hearts. Such cultured people and loving people and products of Prabhupada's mercy. And it just shows you the universal nature of Krishna consciousness, because it's Nitya Dharma. It's the nature of the soul to serve God. God is, religion is not a particular faith. It's not a particular faith, but it's the nature of the soul to love God. And Krishna consciousness is a very, very special type of love. One second, I'm just looking for some. I feel I'm going to lose my voice, so let me just see if I can find some. I can find some throat lozenges. I think I saw some. One second. Krishna consciousness is a very special type of love. It's a very intimate love. Because it's loving God as I got something. Loving God as loving God in an intimate way. Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavato Mati. It's loving God as a friend, a parent, lover. In those type of relationships, the heart is expressed. So it's a very special thing. God is expressing his heart. I've been going to the Govardhan retreat on the other side of the hill, on the eastern side of the hill. That's the western side of the hill, Chatipura, place of Madhavendrapura. And about 300-400 devotees. Bhoyajan is doing very brilliant presentations of Krishna Leela in relationship to japa, because he's using the stories to illustrate particular mode of consciousness, which is completely analogous to the consciousness we need in terms of relating to the holy name of Krishna. But before that, he gave this one slideshow. And it showed a king in a king's inner chambers and the difference in their relationship. He sits on a throne. He's very distant. When he enters into the inner chambers, the king has intimate relationships. And it's a set. So Krishna consciousness is entering into the inner chamber of the King of Kings. And it's so a very, very special thing. It's a very special thing to have this love, this type of dharma. Dharma of the soul. It was so nice seeing how Krishna is just benedicting these people who who love Krishna so much. They love Krishna. And they're so cultured and nice. And that, now we can go to the story of Akura. And these stories of the Bhagavatam, they have very many wonderful aspects that exemplify love. One second. They have very beautiful stories exemplifying love. Intense love for God. I've often described, kind of, in one sense, my realization, but it's more or less my realization of Rupa Goswami's realization. And basically, that the ultimate reality is rasa, and rasa means an overwhelming experience, overwhelming emotion. So the ultimate reality is this overwhelming sentiment of loving God, which is churned and heightened by a divine drama, by which Krishna and his devotees participate. But the central theme is that in perfection, everyone's heart is overflowing with love in a particular way. It's very, very individualistic. Each person's a flavor of love. Or there's a particular flavor of love shaped in a particular way for Krishna's pleasure. It's like a child, you know, it may be the same type of cookie, the same ingredients, but the cookie is shaped in different ways. And it kind of adds a little bit pleasure. So there's different types of preparations of love. There's parental love. There's conjugal love. There's fraternal love. There's reverential love. And within them, there are individuals whose hearts are suitable to be a receptacle of that love and express it in a particularly unique way. You can even look in terms of your own life if you have some friends. So the mood is friendship, and it may be the same, but you could relish that same love through a different personality. a different expression of that same love. So reading the Bhagavatam is the ultimate book. Actually, Satchinandana Swami today, he's lecturing on Brahma Vimohan Leela, gave a definition by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that Leela means to nourish and protect. So Leela, this divine drama, nourishes love. And it protects us from anything that overcomes love. We have so many things that overcome love. Orijan was describing various demons, and it's a brilliant exposition. But he gave a that basic definition of demoniac mentality, making plans based on your own desires, selfish desires. So the Bhagavatam really, it's relishable and it works on the heart to increase our love. Voltaire said that which we appreciate gradually belongs to us. So if we appreciate love, rasa, bhakti, that becomes our focus. That becomes our focus. Then it gradually comes to us. One second. The lights went out and then my inverter will go on. Okay. So I think on this Sunday morning, Eastern Standard Time, of course it's the evening here, I think we should just try to relish the Kura's love. I think, and understand really that this is the goal of life. Prema mumartha pramartha bahan. There's nothing more valuable than love. We all seek it. Whether we're successful or not, it's perfection. It's perfection. But we shut the heart off from service by trying to put ourselves in the center. By trying to put our desires in the center. And by looking at the world through those desires. And by trying to manipulate the material energy to satisfy those desires. And to the extent that's your objective. And it's so subtle, even in our bhakti, what is our objective for our bhakti? So many insidious desires can enter in. That we want bhakti because we're in a bhakti society and we'll become more advanced, we'll be more respected. It's seeing the world through our own desires. But love means to see the world through the desires of your beloved. And the topmost love is to see the world through the desires of God. And we have so many layers of misconceptions, so many layers of desires, that shut us off from that experience which we really want. And that type of love is so sweet. It's such a high flavor. It's such an ecstasy. And the only way we are going to get it is by absorption in God, which will draw out from our hearts this attraction for God, this love for God, that becomes reflected on everything. As one sees God everywhere, sees God through his energies. So here, Kura is led a life of devotion. His whole life, he's led this incredible life of devotion. With what objective? That I will love Krishna, I will be with Krishna, I will develop my relationship with Krishna. That's his objective. And now he's on the brink of that objective being fulfilled. And he's extremely excited about it. And in that emotion, he's expressing it. When you have strong emotion, your actions, which include your words, often supersede your judgment. That's spontaneous. Does not go through the thought process. Is this right or wrong? It just manifests so naturally. So Akura is in this state of enthusiasm. He's going to see his God. And naturally, when that bhakti is excited, then the heart opens up with glorification. Described many, many times, a wonderful definition I read of kirtan, that kirtan is when the bhava in the heart, that relationship with God, is expressed through the discipline of music. So kirtan, or glorification, is the natural result of love. And those who have that love, they are always talking about God. And that develops a different value system. We judge things not by how much they stimulate our ego or our senses. We judge things, we value things by how much they bring us closer to Krishna, which means by how much they facilitate our service and glorification of Krishna. Now, Akura, as a pure devotee, because he's He's familiar to some extent, but he's also reverential. He has appreciation for God. That appreciation is also sometimes called Shraddha. You have faith in this worthy object of love. And you don't underestimate. And he's going to describe his realizations. That sins are destroyed and great fortune is created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearance. And words that describe these three things, animate, beautify, and purify the world. This is the symptom of bhakti, even at the stage of sadhana bhakti. Auspiciousness comes, which means klesha agni. The kleshas are burnt. They're the psychological underpinnings of attachment and aversion that form the basis of the material mind. And good fortune is created. This is his realization. And words that describe the qualities, activities, and appearances, they animate, they give life to the world, they beautify the world, they purify the world. This is the nature of devotion. And on the other hand, those that are bereft of his glories are like decorations on a corpse. That same Supreme Lord has descended into the dynasty of the Satvatas to delight the exalted demigods who maintain the principles of religion he has created. So he has some understanding of God's greatness. And you find in all relationships with God, there's some sense of his divinity. Of course, in Braja, Vrindavan, it never covers his intimate side. It's like the mother, her son becomes the president, so she glorifies it, my son, the president. But a position never covers the sweetness. He spreads his fame. Residing in Vrindavan, he spreads his fame, which the demigods glorify in song, and which brings auspiciousness to all. Because what is auspiciousness? Auspiciousness is awakening one's devotion in the heart. And this happens by this kirtan. Today I shall certainly see him, the goal and spiritual master of the great soul. So we explained before, he's the objective of great souls. Their objective is God. And he's also their guide, because when his senses are controlled, the Paramatma is at reach. The devotee has communion with God. Seeing him brings jubilation to all who have eyes, for he is the true beauty of the universe. So one of the six opulences of God is his beauty. It's just a reflection of his desire to please. Indeed, his personal form is the shelter desired by the goddess of fortune. Now all the dawns of my life have become auspicious. So this is the perfection to actually attain God. And that means attaining one's relationship with God. It means pure love. Borijan says there's a door to the spiritual world which only, it's only big enough for a soul to go through. And any coverings will prevent one at the gate. So imagine a little tiny infinitesimal hole that your soul can go through and everything else external cannot. So we'll read more of his prayers. Then I will at once alight from my chariot and will bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Theirs are the same feet that great mystic yogis striving for self-realization bear within their minds. I will also offer my obeisances to the Lord's cowherd boyfriends and to all the other residents of Vrindavan. So this is humility. Humility always talks about the feet. It glorifies the feet. I've explained this many times. So many have heard this before. Padasevanam, one of the nine items of devotional service, serving the feet, means humble service. Because to put someone's feet above you is not only humble, but it's an acknowledgement of the exalted nature of the person. That which is the lowest part of the body is above you. And when I have fallen at his feet, the Almighty Lord will place his lotus feet upon my head. For those who seek shelter in him, because they are greatly disturbed by the powerful serpent of time, that hand removes all fear. So, fear is the illusion of being separate from God because it means I'm independent. And when you're independent, you have no shelter. Unless you're independent and all-powerful, which we're not. So you have no shelter, and therefore you're fearful. But a devotee is not fearful because he has the supreme shelter. The solution to any of his problems is a possibility in God. So the devotee is not fearful. Because reality is beautiful. The false perception we have of what is there is frightening because without true knowledge we see the body as the self, which is temporary, and therefore we live in a world which we are threatened by non-existence. So he's describing the feet and his aspirations, that those feet will come upon his head and it removes all fear. It's the greatest fear is of non-existence. And in the presence of God, we see ourselves, which is eternal. And we realize it. By By offering charity to that lotus hand, Purandara and Bali earned the status of Indra, king of heaven. And during the pleasure pastimes of the rasa dance, when the Lord wiped away the gopis' perspiration and removed their fatigue, the touch of their faces made that hand as fragrant as a sweet flower. So Krura has this incredible appreciation. He's realized. And therefore he's not an illusion. He can see God. He's been praying to God. And he knows what that means. He knows that the power and heart of God is so great that it can't be fully described in words. But when one wants to glorify God, one attempts to do so, and that's what Akura is trying to do. So he's glorified the feet, now he's glorifying the hands. The infallible Lord will not consider me an enemy, even though Kamsa has sent me here as his messenger. After all, the omniscient Lord is the actual knower of the field of this material body. With his perfect vision, he witnesses, both externally and internally, all the endeavors of the conditioned soul. So Kuras is confident that God sees our heart. And that's what the process of bhakti is. The process of bhakti is showing God our heart. A heart which loves God, a heart which wants to please God, a heart which takes full shelter of God, Krishna. So, bhakti means to offer our heart to God. And God sees our hearts. Therefore, we may make so many poses to try to enhance our prestige. We may externally appear in one way and internally appear in another way. But one who has faith understands that one cannot hide from God because he's seeing everything. After all, the omniscient Lord is the actual knower of the field of this material body. With his perfect vision, he witnesses both externally and internally all the endeavors of the conditioned soul's heart. So bhakti is to develop and pray for that heart. A heart which Krishna can see and derives pleasure. Thus he will cast his smiling, affectionate glance upon me as I remain fixed with joint palms, fallen in obeisance at his feet. Then all my contamination will at once be dispelled, and I will give up all doubts and feel the most intense bliss. So I think it's Jiva Goswami and some comment on the verse of the Bhagavatam, Vidyate Hridaya Granthas, that by chanting and hearing about Krishna, it destroys the false ego. So, he's talking about personal contact with God. And his smile, and he'll glance upon me and with affection. And then all doubts will be given up and one will feel the most intense bliss. for sure, when you get that Sakshat Darshan, you see God, your doubts are destroyed. The doubt, the two doubts, is it true? Can I attain him? So Kaur is saying, I will have direct Darshan. I will see him. And when I see him and he's, I'll remain with folded hands, because that's the mudra of a servant. Joined palms, these hands are meant for you. And obeisances, I am inferior. That's the two bhavs of the servant. I am inferior, and I want to serve. And then that will be the greatest bliss. Doubts close the heart to the experience of prema. So we get our doubts cleared, and that opens our hearts more and more. It makes us more and more aware. We hear the glories of. Recognizing me as an intimate friend and relative, Krishna will embrace me with his mighty arms, instantly sanctifying my body and diminishing to nil all my material bondage, which is due to fruitive activities. So material bondage means, due to fruitive activities means, we acted selfishly. We desire selfishly. And therefore, because we have that consciousness, God facilitates that. By reflecting our consciousness on matter. Which is allows us to have the vicarious thrill of being the controller. Having been embraced by the all-famous Lord Krishna, I will humbly stand before him with bowed head and joined palms, and he will address me, my dear Akura. At that very moment, my life's purpose will be fulfilled. Indeed, the life of anyone who the Supreme Personality fails to recognize is simply pitiful. So, of course, it's not just that God's not recognizing him. It's not we're not opening our hearts towards him. Okay, we'll stop here for today. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Gail here.
Hi, Bogil.
Yeah, I have a couple, actually. One is, you said there are two kinds of doubts.
Yes.
Can
yeah,
you say again?
Doubts.
Yeah, what those two are?
Is it true? Can
is
I
it true
it?
That? Is it
is
true
it,
that
is
what?
God true?
Uh-huh.
That God exists?
Yeah.
And then if that doubt is cleared, then you still have the doubt, can I attain him?
Right.
So when one gets that darshan of God, then those doubts are finally destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And up till that point, there'll be some slight doubts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And also you said that, you know, in humility, we see, you know, I guess we would see both God and his representative, means the spiritual master, as inferior to ourselves. And so
no, we see ourselves as inferior.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, especially in with respect to the spiritual master, we see ourselves as what inferior, because we see ourselves as inferior in terms of devotion to God, or how specifically do we see ourselves as inferior to the spiritual master?
In terms of authority, which means one's knowledge and one's realization. just like medically, you'll feel yourself inferior to a doctor in terms of medical science because he has knowledge, his realization of the subject. So you'll feel, and therefore you say lotus feet, right? Sri Guru Charana Padma, Kevala Bhaktita, lotus feet of my spiritual master. It's a sign of humility, and it's a sign of the acknowledgement of superiority. Because what is great except knowledge and realization?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just one last thing.
Sure.
Akur was praying for Krishna's darshan. But I guess that was
Krishna's darshan.
He was, yeah, but I imagine that, you know, since he is a pure devotee, I'm imagining that maybe just like the gopis, you know, who always have the bhava manifestation of Krishna in their heart, you know, but maybe externally they may not see him. So it's the same with Akura. He always had darshan of Krishna in his heart, but maybe not externally. Is it like that?
Well, whatever it is, I guess he may have met him before, but he really hasn't seen Krishna, obviously, in a very long time. And he's so eager because he's heard about him. So,
but does he have that bhava manifestation carrying with him?
Does he have what? Akura is is the exemplar of devotional service for prayers. He's an extraordinary soul.
Mm-hmm. So is the answer yes?
To what?
I'm asking, does he always see Krishna in his heart in terms of Krishna's bhava manifestation?
Akura. But
yeah.
Even the gopis were in separation, right?
Yeah.
His love is not as great as the gopis. It's not Praja Bhakti. So it's not as forceful. It's reverential.
Ah.
So it's not the same. But he's still a pure devotee, so it's so extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Gail. We'll stop there. Okay. Any other questions? Anybody like
Maharaj?
I'm going on. Yeah, Muni?
Yeah. I might have accidentally cut somebody off. It's hard sometimes. Should I can wait a second.
No, speak.
Well, first of all, Maharaj, I wanted to thank you again for this class. It's really a great service. A kind service you're offering everybody, and it's really inspiring.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I guess, Marge, what I wanted to do is just kind of put something forth for you to ask your thoughts
on. Yes, I appreciate that. Yeah.
I found that that you were discussing about the way in which Akrura's doubts were finally ultimately destroyed upon experiencing Krishna, or at least upon this. When he was about to experience Krishna, and somehow I was thinking about.
Let me give you the verse. What it says, so it says, he says, thus he will cast his smiling, affectionate glance upon me as I remain fixed with folded palms. Fallen in the basin, then all my contamination will at once be dispelled, and I will give up all doubts and feel the most intense bliss. Yeah, so
Okay, great.
Good.
So what I was thinking, Marge, is, you know, I've spent a lot of time, and I'm doing a lot of research and thinking about some of the most important theories of knowledge in India, and these are ones shared by, you know, the Vedanta tradition and Aya and looking at Pramanas. And one thing that often comes up that I just wanted to kind of offer to you is something that we maybe could think about if you want, is most of the, you know, a very standard way of describing the goal of knowledge is that the function of knowledge is to guide action. It's to guide action. And one symptom of knowledge is nishkampa pravritti, unhesitating action. And so it just kind of struck me, Marj, that this is something I'm pretty struck by, that for India, the default state of life is just to act with confidence, and doubt arises as a kind of interruption to that you have to resolve. And then once you're done, you just get back to doing whatever it is that you're doing with confidence. And so I'm not sure, you know, I don't know. I guess what I'm thinking about is one of the great philosophers in India, Vatsyayana, not the author of the Kama Sutra, but the commentator on the Nyaya Sutra, he says that there's two ways that knowledge helps us overcome doubts. One is to know what's true, but the other is not just to know what's true, but it's to give us the right emotional responses to what's true. And so, for example, it's like if we need to get medicine, knowledge helps us get to the doctor's office, but it also helps us realize that even though the medicine tastes bad, we need to take it. And so I don't know, Marge. It was just in my mind, and I don't really have a big thing to put out here as much. But I know you enjoy sometimes these kind of things. But I just appreciate how there's both. So I guess what I wanted to put forth
the
is
thing
this
that
idea
I got.
There's this thing that,
the thing that I got was Jiva Goswami's. I think it's quote on that verse, "Vidyate Rivya Grantis," that, you know, at that time, the knot in the heart is destroyed. And he discusses at that time the doubts. But I like your idea too, because there's also a statement, without faith, there's no movement. You can't move. If you don't have faith, you don't move. So I like that too. And I think movement is in two directions. And the second one you mentioned is the response, the appropriate response to knowledge, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't do it, you know, and that is an emotional response too. Means I like this, I don't like it. It's, you know, this is the right response. I have knowledge now, right? I don't like heroin, or I shouldn't take it, you know, so I can see it, right? It identifies something, and part of that identification is how you should position yourself towards it.
Yeah, and then that's what kind of struck me, Marsh, is that, like, when I think of doubts, it's not that every doubt is, like, does God exist? There's a lot of people who believe God exists, but deep down, and I would include myself in this category, there's this profoundly deep-rooted idea that I just won't be as happy giving myself to God, and that to me is like a doubt that it's not a doubt about the object. It's a lack of confidence on an emotional level, a lack of investment. And so it's just interesting how knowledge is not always about establishing the truth of something, but it's about helping us reorient ourselves towards it so that our kind of emotional responses are appropriate, so to speak.
Yeah, but isn't that connected with understanding something? I mean, ascribing value, it's not just understanding something exists, but it's ascribing value to it, right?
Yeah. I guess what I was just riffing on is what you just said, that so much of doubt is the object real? The doubt is acting in relation to this object.
You're commenting on that, right? So you're saying it's also in Nyaya, and this is kind of the same thing in
absolutely.
One sense. Does it exist?
Absolutely.
Then if it exists, can I attain it?
Yeah.
Can I? And not only can I attain it, but will attaining it make me happy? And that's a doubt
right.
which kind
oh,
of exists
yeah.
even when you believe in God. Anyway, Amaris, just riffing on it a bit. I really appreciate it, class.
No, I appreciate it because we have you're so busy that you haven't been on as much as before. But it's always nice when you come on.
Well, thank you.
I'm really working out here in India. It's like it's nonstop people coming, nonstop. I mean, it's like my room becomes the United Nations of the spiritual world. One day it's the Russians. One day it's the Chinese. Tomorrow the Iranians are coming, And but Iranians are it's very special. Persia must have had a very high culture at one time. You can see it. And so, I'll give you an example. These are very, very educated people. Because obviously, you don't do food for life in Iran, and see who comes through the door. It's like kind of, and the lady who was doing the preaching there was describing to me. I mean, it was really wonderful because actually we went to see Giriraj Swami and asked all of them, how they came to Krishna consciousness. And two qualities that I noticed in all of them, they were emotionally secure, and therefore they were, without fear, they were able to express themselves. There wasn't like a hesitancy of fear. As you can see, it was like stable people, and they can express themselves. And it was very articulate. But the lady who brought many of them described that, and a lot of them described that they had to fight their way in to find out what was going on, And, what happened is finally people wanted to know more or learn more, so she devised this test. And so you have to take a test, and the test is, what is your conception of God? She asked all these questions so that they would reveal the people's sincerity, because it's so dangerous there. If you make a mistake or something like that. But anyway, I took him out on these wonderful, wonderful parikrams. There's this place in Vrindavan called Tatiyastan, and they preserve. It's in the Panchkrosh Vrindavan. They preserve Vrindavan as it was 500 years ago. There's no electricity. And they're constantly cleaning this beautiful forest within their compound. And they're constantly cleaning the dirt, the sand. And I went in there with them and we did kirtan. And it was so visual because they all dress, not in saris, but it's more, it's traditional. Their heads are covered or whatever, And they were just dancing and dancing and dancing among the trees of this forest. Such a beautiful scene. And it's pretty busy. So I sometimes don't get as much time to prepare the class as I want. Like today, I was Ted Satchinanda Swami's Katha, then Bori John's Katha, and then met with some people. Anyway. Okay, anyone else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I wanted to thank you and also Henry Prabhu, being in sixth year, as I met him yesterday in Gita Nagari.
What's that?
Henry Prabhu, Henry.
I didn't hear you. What's the last thing?
Henry Prabhu, I think he's the founder.
Henry Prabhu, what?
He was in Gita Nagari yesterday. Can you hear me?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Oh, Andy Babu, thank you.
I was driving. It took me a minute to unmute. That was one of the best classes I have ever heard, Maharaj. I'm deeply moved. Thank you so much.